So today is Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and this Rosh Chodesh is mentioned explicitly in the Chumash, in Shemois, chapter 19, which is the preamble to the Ten Commandments, revelation of the Decalogue. Study this a bit in depth. As it gives an understanding of the greatest event in human history, which is a revelation by the creator of the world to 3 million human beings. And it was given in the desert with his message, is really addressed to the whole world, and has become also the greatest force of virtue and pursuit of a moral lifestyle by human beings until today. So let's try to understand it more deeply. And we'll start with the first phrase. And I'm going to get you to join in, please. So would one of you who can read Hebrew well, read the first verse of chapter 19. How does it start?
Yom Hazeh. Is that the right one? בחודש השלישי.
Say the whole verse, yes.
בחודש השלישי, בצאת בני ישראל מארץ מצרים, ביום הזה, ראו מדבר סיני.
Can be translated to English?
In the third month after the departing of the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, the same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai.
So I'm going to start with the following question. If you look at all the chapters of the Chumash, nearly all of them, how are they connected? How is any chapter in the Chumash you take, and even the new Sefer of the Chumash you take, with which Hebrew letter does it begin?
Vav.
Vav. What's Vav mean?
And
what's Vav look like?
Straight line. Vertical line.
It's a pictograph of, what does the word Vav mean in Hebrew?
Like a hook.
A hook. It's also got a pictograph of a hook, is the Vav. What does a hook do? A hook connects things. Connects one thing to the other. You hook up something with something.
It also supports something to be held up.
Yeah. So everything is connected. But there's another power to the Vav in Hebrew. What is it?
It reverses the verb tense.
Yes, a Vav. A Vav which becomes in front of the verb, it changes it from the past to the future, or the future to the past. That's one of the main differences in the structure of words, modern Hebrew, and not really modern Hebrew, all Hebrew, which comes after the Tanakh. But the Hebrew of the Tanakh, Hebrew of the Bible, has this Vav HaHippo. Has a Vav which means and which means connected things. And only the Bible, and people in quotations from the Bible, do we find this unique aspect of the vow, they can even change the past to the future to the past. Why is this? Because the Bible is a book of prophecy, which teaches us everything mentioned in the Bible, which has happened, is a lesson for the future, and might even happen in the future. If it doesn't, it's a lesson for the future. Also teaches us that whatever is in the future has its seeds in the past. It's the concept of time and the outlook of life of the Bible, different to any literature in the world. So therefore we find not only in verbs there's a constant deep prophetic message in the vav which connects the past to the future and the future to the past, but also we find nearly each chapter in the Chumash and even each book of the Chumash starts with the vav to connect it to the previous, because the story of the Chumash is a constant fluid without interruption. One is connected with the other. So for example, if you turn to the beginning of Shemos, which is obviously separate from the book of Bereshit, because it deals with a different... What does it start with? What does it say at the beginning of Shemos? The first verse of this book, Exodus, what is it? It doesn't say Eile, these are the names. It's a V'Eile. And these are the names. Which means you want to understand the history of the people in Egypt. So you have to go back to the forefathers in Egypt. What happened to Yosef? And then when you hear the book of Shemos is the history of the birth of the nation, which came from a family. It's interrelated, even though it's a separate book. So there, what's the first question you will ask when you come to the beginning of chapter 19? It leaves out the vav, as though it's like a new thing entirely, something entirely new. Now, why do you think it's something entirely new?
Why? Because they departed from Egypt.
Gone?
They departed from Egypt.
The new nation was born.
Well, they were born before. But, I hinted at it in the first words.
A free nation was born.
Yes, any other suggestions?
Because it's a new month.
It's a new month, okay, but normally it introduces you, Vahi b'chodesh ha-shlishi, that's what it would say.
Okay.
And it was in the third month. But this is no, b'chodesh ha-shlishi. Alright, we don't have the answer straight away. So, I'll ask something else. Then it says, 3 months after Israel went out from the land of Egypt, Bayom hazeh, on this day they came to Bar Sinai. It should have said Bayom Ahu, on that day, wouldn't Bayom Hazeh, on this day. Should have said on that day.
Because it's like we're constantly like, just like I left Egypt yesterday.
Well, what does Rashi say? Rashi says something like this. Rashi, this question is not my question, it's the question of Rashi. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, it should have said on that day. But we're giving a description of the journey of Israel from Egypt, they came to Sinai, and then they came to other places. Why is it Bayom Hazeh? So Rashi says, Ma Bayom Hazeh, Shiudivrei Torah Chadashim Alecha Kiulayom Nitnu. The words of the Torah should be new to you as though they were given today. Like also, for example, it's exactly what some newspapers use. Yeah? There are plenty of newspapers called Hayom, which means today. Yeah? In my paper, you'll get the latest news. Ydiot Achronot, the latest news. Yeah? So they say Bayom. Some even want to use the word Hazeh, they also say it. And all of us are interested every day to know what's the latest news. So here we are told, for us, the most important, and the Rashi said, we love new things. It's true. We do love new things. And new things, so the Torah is something new every day. You should look at the Torah anew every day. So I'm going to take this a little bit further. If you study this 90th chapter, you'll find in it the root davar, which means the word. The Decalogue are the 10 words. But word here means statements, declarations. Sefer HaDibrot it's called in the Chumash. So, in this chapter, that root is mentioned 10 times. In other words, this is a chapter that gives an introduction to the highest level of Torah, which is, what's the highest level of Torah? So, the Decalogue. Because the Decalogue contains the roots of the whole Torah. So, you know it contains uh, 620 letters, Keter Torah. So it's for the mitzvot. And Rav Tzadik On reckons all the mitzvot under the headings of the Decalogue. So here there's emphasized the newness of the Torah. And also that the giving of the Torah is taken away from the normal dimensions of time. It's above time. It's the word of Hashem who's above time and has application constantly. And that's how we have to regard it, as being the eternal message of Hashem to mankind through the people of Israel, because we have to become the model and the teachers for mankind. And when it was given specifically in the desert, which was at that time no man's land, which means every man's land, so it was open to all mankind as it is until today. And its power becomes in a way stronger and more important the longer the human race exists. Today, for example, it's probably the only real manifesto that can save mankind from self-destruction. And it's very important to go into deeply. So therefore Rashi says on this verse that Bayom Azeh, Rashi says the word Perosh Chodesh, and the whole concept Chodesh in any case is the concept of renewal, so Rashi connects the two. We have to reckon as though we are also preparing ourselves to receive the Torah again in our time. And the Rambam, when he describes the article of faith that the Torah came from Sinai, uses the words, and the Rambam doesn't say it poetically, he says it as a definition, in a way, that our eyes saw and our ears heard, how Hashem spoke with man. It means that the soul of the Jew has deep inside his soul a memory of Har Sinai. And that's we try to revive each year. Now, the Ramban, if you can please you take the English translations. I think there might be some more at the back there. You look. I'm going to say it in Hebrew. If there's someone here who can say the Ramban in Hebrew, it would be helpful. But maybe I'll say the first one. So, Bachodesh Hashlishi. The Ramban asks another question. Ayara'ui, Shi'omar Katuv, Vaisu Merfidim, Vyachnub Mazinai. So, the Ramban connects this verse with the next verse. What does verse 2 say? Can one of you read? Let's read the English of the next verse. Verse 2, what does it say?
They journeyed from Rephidim, and they encamped in the wilderness of Sinai in the third month after going forth from the land of Egypt. Just as it said above concerning the wilderness of Sin.
No, just translate the verse. Just the verse.
Oh, that's what it said. And then
so the question is that the first verse is really, it's superfluous. And it's not descriptive, because as we said, it's not connected with the previous. We have in the previous chapters a report that the people of Israel were encamped in the Rephidim. And then verse 2 says, quite correctly, with a vav, yeah, and they traveled from Rephidim, and then they came to the desert of Sinai. And they encamped in the desert, and there the people of Israel camped opposite the mountain. So this second verse is even also exaggerating, because it repeats certain places and so on. It could say it much shorter. But in any case, it's giving a report of what happened. So why do we have the first verse? Why does it say they came to the Mount Sinai without even mentioning where they came from? And then the next verse says they came from Rephidim and then they came to the Midbar Sinai. So the Ramban comments on this. It says as follows. This first verse, it said it would be more fitting according to syntax and grammar, if it would have said they traveled away from Rephidim and then they encamped in the desert of Sinai in the third month of their exodus from the land of Egypt, like is said before with regard to traveling Bemidbar Sin. So why does it say here, in the first introductory verse, they came to Midbar Sinai? For them to come into the desert of Sinai was for them a great day of joy and even festivity. And they had been urgently and eagerly waiting for this time from the day they left. From the time when they left Egypt, kiyadu, because they knew Shishami Kabri Torah. They already knew the place where the Torah would be given on the mountain in the desert of Sinai. Why? Because if you look to chapter 3, verse 12. And Shemot. There we have the first mention of Sinai. In connection with what? And then you tell me, in connection with what we have first mention of Sinai? In connection with?
Moshe.
The snare, the burning bush. So in connection with the burning bush, they came to the desert of Sinai. They were, the name of Sinai is on account of the bushes, called Sneh. And it was from there that Hashem revealed himself to Moshe, and he said to Moshe that he should become his prophet, and he should come to the high level of bring the people of Israel to the service of Hashem on that mountain. But Moshe said that to them, and even to Paro, Moshe after fulfilled his mission, and he said, "Neil chana derek shloshetim bidba, let us go for 3 days in the desert and give offerings to Hashem our God." It's the journey from Egypt to the mountain of Sinai. In fact, the words that are mentioned there are "Utziachai ta'amim Mitzrayim, ta'avdun etai Elokim alazeh." Moshe was told, "You must become the prophet of Pharaoh, the prophet of the people of Israel, and when you take out the people from Egypt, people should serve me on this mountain." And they're even told it's going to take 50 days from when you leave Egypt and reach that mountain. And instead of saying, if you look in that passage, chapter 3, instead of saying the verse which Ramban brings, it's Abdul. Why does it say ta'avdu? What's the significance of the noon? Well, what is the numerical number of noon?
50.
So there's a hint here that they were told, that to be told, it'll take you 50 days and 50 steps to be able to receive the Torah at Sinai. So that they were told beforehand, when the revelation was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, they were waiting for it. They counted the days to reach this time. Therefore, for them, it was like a new span of life when they came to the Midbar Sinai. Although it was a desert, but it was still something of great happiness. That's why the parsha begins, "Vachodesh Hashlishi." This third month was of great importance. And they came there. Then the next verse says, and describes the journeyings. The journey was from Eden till they came to the desert of Sinai. Now, there's an interesting passage in the Gemara concerning the third month. Why the Torah was given the third month? We already discussed the 50th day. We already discussed that at length, which goes into the whole aspect of Sfirat HaOmer. But the third month also has significance. And there's even a Galilean scholar who said like this. He said that the third month, the Torah was given the third month, and it was a threefold Torah. Well, the Torah ultimately included Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim, three sections. It's given by the third child. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the third child to his parents. It's given to a threefold people. And you tell me, who are the threefold people?
Kohen,
Levi, and Israel. So, I'll give you here the Maral's interpretation. The Maral says like this. The concept of the tree, of the three, is nothing to do with the Holy Trinity of Christianity. But there is a concept in the Torah, a deep concept, of balance of life. In life you always have to balance extremes. It says, "Vazanta le mitzvotat." says you should give ear to the mitzvot. Why is the ear called an ozen in Hebrew for the Santa? Give ear. Do you know what is a ma'azan? What are moznayim in Hebrew?
Moznayim are scales.
Huh?
Scales?
Scales. Scales create a balance. And although it was only discovered, I think 400 years ago, by the scientists, but also lies in the holy language, which gives us many deeper, even physiological truths, but certainly psychological and philosophical truths, that the balance of a person in life depends upon. What's it depend upon? On the fluid in the inner ear. If the fluid in the inner ear is infected, a person loses his balance and can no longer walk forward. So, the Torah is a path of life which teaches us balancing. We discussed it in connection with the midot. You've always got to do things in the right measure. It says in the Torah itself, don't add to the mitzvot and don't take away from them. If you take away from them, it's a kola mosif korea. If you add to the mitzvot, it leads you to take away from them. For example, a person says on Shabbat, I'll give you an example which applies to digestion as well. Mitzvot have three meals. A person decides he enjoys the food, he's going to have 6 meals on the Shabbat. What will happen? He'll have indigestion, and the rest of the week he won't be able to function. So don't add to it, but you take away from it. There can be a person who says, well, I love to learn Torah, especially at night time. So therefore, at night time, he learns for a good few hours. Then he can't get up the next morning, not for anything. And all day long, the next day, he's got headaches. And he can't learn, he can't do tefillah, because he didn't do things to the right balance. How far does the balance go? We have a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur. The Torah says, but the day before, you've got a feast. Because fasting is not an end in itself. Just as feasting is not an end in itself. So in everything you have to do, take the right balance. That's very important, especially for some people at the beginning of their path in Torah. So that's the deeper concept of the three. So this is one aspect of importance. But I want to emphasize here what the Ramban says, something very significant. He says that since the people were waiting for it, therefore they were in great joy. Rashi already brings the concept because everyone likes something which is new. And for them, they knew they were in for a very new experience, never before and never after experienced by any group of mankind. The same man, individuals maybe, but not groups, not 3 million people. Not possible.
So how is it that
they were in great joy? How did we get the 3 million?
How did the Avos already keep the Torah if it wasn't given?
Individuals.
Yeah.
Individuals, yes. Yeah. Individuals had revelations, no other. But the whole people should get revelations of Torah had not been before. There were beforehand great individual prophets, our forefathers. Really? But not in such a manner, also not in such a manner, on such a high level, as given the Torah, and certainly not for such a large group, for a whole nation. Now, this goes together with another statement. See, in the second verse, it says, "Aisu merfidim." Should we read this? look at the yes, we'll do the Rashi on the first two, then we come back to this Ramban. So Rashi says, did someone read the Rashi of Pasuk Beit? Someone got the Hebrew of Rashi? So I'll say, Tlama Hutra Lachzo Lefarish Mechem Nasa, why does he explain again from where they traveled? It says already in the previous chapter that they were encamped in the Rephidim. Harukva katavshi b'Rephidim ayuchonim. V'yadua shemisham nasol. So we know that they traveled from there. Ela lahakrish nisiatan merfidim leviatam nemidbar Sinai. But to compare their journey from Rephidim to their arriving in the desert of Sinai. Ma biatan lamidbar Sinai b'teshuva. Just like when they came to the desert of Sinai, they did teshuvah. So also, when they traveled away from Rephidim, it was teshuvah. But what happened in Rephidim? Rephidim means rafu yedehem min haTorah. Their hands became weakened in Torah. And what happened in Rephidim? They were attacked by whom?
By
Amalek. And why were they attacked? Because their power of Torah was weak. And as a result, Amalek attacked them. As we know, when Torah is weak amongst Am Yisrael, then our enemies, Amalek and the descendants, like Esau, they attack us. But they did teshuva. They looked upwards to Hashem, and they were able to even pursue Amalek and destroy them because of their power of teshuvah. And they came to Bar Sinai, they did teshuvah. So here there's a very interesting comment that their coming to Sinai was something new, was a renewal. A renewal means you've done teshuvah. Whatever is past has become forgiven through teshuvah. Question is, how do we really know they came to the Midbar Sinai with teshuvah? Some people ask. So it's true that teshuvah includes regret that I've done wrong and feeling pain on it. But the essence of a teshuva is to enter into a new type of living, which comes through serving Hashem with joy. So here we're going to quote the words of the Baal HaTanya. You know he was the founder of the Chabad movement. He says, how do we understand teshuva? He said, teshuva is to try to go back and face Hashem. Because teshuva means to go back to our origin. And the soul takes the origin with Hashem. So this way we can understand that when a person does wrong, he turns his back to Hashem. Ki fonu elav elai oref. You've turned your back to me, as the prophet said. And now we turn back to Hashem to fulfill His Torah and His mitzvot. But this is not yet the inner desire. If a person just he starts keeping mitzvot again, they can often become mitzvot anashim lumada. They'll become routine, ritual. Tshuva, this is what the Altana said, tshuva means to try to face Hashem. The inner desire of a person in the Torah of Hashem is mitzvot with joy. It says you've got to serve Hashem with joy, inwardly. And since the essence of tshuva adds coming near to Hashem, and this can only come through deeper simcha, so now we understand that when they came to Sinai with great, as Ramban says, with great joy, we can learn this from the order of the verses. So this is a very important teaching for all of us. Always, if do, Hashem besimcha. That's why when we come to, especially to re-experience the given the Torah, we're all going to be in great simcha. But now let's look at the second verse a bit more. Oh, just a minute, it says another important lesson that I've done. You look at those who follow, anyone follow the Ramban in Hebrew? So perhaps, if not, I'll paraphrase it immediately to English. He says it like this. Okay. We would have expected it to say they traveled from Rephidim and they encamped in the desert of Sinai. But what does it say in this verse? Look at the verse again. They traveled from Rephidim, they came to the desert of Sinai. And then they encamped in the desert. It's just repeated. We know there's no extra word in the Chumash. So therefore, what does it teach us? If it would have said that they came to the desert of Sinai, it would be fit. It says, Vayavo, that immediately when they came, they first recognized, here we've come to the place where we can expect Hashem to reveal us His will. And they decided, when they saw where they were, this is the place, we'll see the mountain in front of us, that we will encamp. And they did not wait till they came to a better place to encamp. Could have found a better. You're looking for a nice place to encamp, you like to find a place where there's an oasis, where there's some water. No. Chonu b'midbar. In other words, normally one would expect that people know we're going to have to stay here for some time, so they'll choose a place in the desert where there's some form of a fountain. Somewhere, some place of water they find. Trees growing. No. They encamped in the desert where nothing was growing. It's called Midbar or Choreb. It's also called Choreb. Choreb is a dry place where nothing grows. Makom, a place of desolation in front of the mountain. And why they do it? Because they knew what they were going to have there, which is to meet with the word of Hashem. So according to this explanation, we take the next, it says Vayachanu, and that's Vayichan Shom. Israel encamped there, opposite the mountain. Now that's surely a repetition. It says already before they encamped there. So I'd say again, Israel encamped there opposite the mountain. Have you got an answer? Well, let me ask you another question then. Yes, and where is that hinted at? That's what Rashi brings. Rashi, in fact,
the superfluous.
That is Rashi's answer to the question. But Vayichan Shom Israel, because they were like one. How do you know they became like one?
Singular.
Because of
when they first arrived there, it says Vayachanu, in the plural. But Vayichan is the singular, and Vayachanu is the plural. So it says the people, Vayachanu, they all first all camped, but then Israel decided we're going to become like one person with one heart. So we say, Abu Sha'akolachanyot, but Tarumot and Machlokot. Rashi says, the other encampments, generally speaking, cause disputes and divisions. So when they were opposite the mountain, the Mizrachon, its east side, it was called Makom Shatamut Zeneged, then it means the face to the east. So there's another distinction. The people are described as Bnei Yisrael when they went off from Egypt, in the plural. And they're always in the plural till you come Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Come to the singular. In other words, Hashem was only willing to give the Torah to the people if there was true unity. They felt themselves with one intention to hear the voice of Hashem, and with feeling their national unity. So the Ramban explains it further. He says, Vayachanu, the whole people, whoever went with them, whoever accompanied the Bnei Israel. But then it says, Israel encamped as one nation of Israel, which means God rules the world, and they encamped. So he says like this, it is possible that they separated from their midst the mixed multitude, Erev Rav, which is in their midst. And only the Bnei Israel alone encamped in front of the mountain. But the mixed multitude, they weren't so unified, because it was going to give the Torah to the true Israel. As it says afterwards, thus should he speak to the house of Yaakov and tell the Bnei Israel. And that's why it says here, Israel, in opposition to the Bnei Israel. In other words, the mixed multitude, who were they? There were many. Either people amongst the slave population that were also persecuted by the Egyptians. And when Am Yisrael left, they left with them. They joined them. And Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to accept them, because he thought the experiences of these people who have also been subjected to the persecution of the Egyptians and rather saw their future with the people of Israel, that they also, it's agreed they're going to keep the mitzvot. So what happened at Lamon happened in between, and other things that happened. So but still, they perhaps were not all ready completely to receive the Torah, even though they may have paid lip service. That could be one of the reasons. But another reason, Rabban says, the name Israel is given to them because of their unification and readiness to receive the Torah, which is the fulfillment of the name Israel. Let's apply this to today. Israel is the name probably used more in all the mass media of the whole world today than any other name. But they don't understand what it means. Israel means that God is the ruler of the world, and that our people have to demonstrate this. They should rule. He rules the lives of mankind. And the name came into its true fulfillment when they received the Torah. Any questions?
I thought the Erev Rav were kind of part of the Bnei Israel, they just kind of not
well,
the same level.
What?
I thought the Erev Rav are considered part of the Jewish nation, they're just kind of
like
they
this.
Make a lot of mistakes.
Well, the way it's described by the sages, that they were the cause also of the golden calf, and therefore when Moshe was on the mountain, Hashem said to him, Lech reit ki shichet amcha. He says, go down quickly, because your people, whom you brought out from Egypt, have become corrupt. And they made themselves a molten calf. Why did Hashem say it in this manner? Didn't he take us out from Egypt? Take out all the people from Egypt?
And Moses chose.
He says like this, Moshe, on nearly all things he consulted with Hashem. But when, suppose it was not even a time when Moshe and there were any other sages available could spend time investigating the sincerity of those who said, we want to join the people of Israel. So when this mikveh means it was a large mixture, a mixture which was great, which had many numbers. They were the ones, many non-Israelites that didn't have family, direct family connections with the descendants of the Bnei Yaakov, but they said, we're joining you. They were also persecuted. And Moshe was therefore lenient. He accepted them. And he was hoping, in any case, even Am Yisrael had not accepted the Torah yet properly. They accept certain mitzvot. And the Erev Rav joined in. They also kept many of the mitzvot, just like the other descendants of the tribes fulfilled the mitzvot. They became friendly with them as well. And when it came to the Moshe didn't come, so it's true, even some Jews, some sons of the tribes, were also affected through the powers of friendship and assimilation to the outlook of life upon the rest of the people of Israel. But these mixed multitude, even though they fulfilled the mitzvot that preceded the giving of the Torah Sinai, and probably also used the name of the God of Israel constantly, for they saw his great power against Paro. But inside, they were still tied to animalistic worship, which was the religion in Egypt. And therefore, they were the ones who suggested when they said, as long as Moshe is here, so he leads us, he teaches us. He hasn't come back. So therefore they said, well, we've got to have some physical symbol of the pure spirit of God. At that time, physical symbol meant the golden calf. Like today, let's say, there are plenty of people in the Far East who have a similar idea. They say the Buddha or other idols that they take. We've got to have a concrete symbol through which you can have our meditation or whatever it is with a spiritual power that lies behind the universe. And so this brought the golden calf. So this is Sheikh El Amcha. So this is Erev Rav, mixed multitude. Now halachically, let's say afterwards, what happened mixed multitude afterwards? They really were examined more closely, and they, on the whole, many of them decide, okay, we're going to forsake idolatry, and we will keep the Torah. And some others, in any case, they participated in the sin of the golden calf, then some of them participated again in the rebellion with the 12 spies later, and they were more or less eliminated in the first generation, as were most of the proper Jews as well, those who were descended from the tribes. And when they went into Eretz Israel, there's probably still some who although they were to some extent present even at Sinai, but they were not so loyal to every aspect of the Torah. And the sages say that it's going to be a similar situation. It says, I'm going to take you back for the final redemption, in the same way that took it out from Egypt. So we have the parallel today as well. And people say that when we find that there are Jews who are very anti-Semitic, not even speaking about Jews who don't keep the Torah, but worse than the ignorant, when Jews become, and they clearly come from Jewish parents, and halachically they're Jewish, and still they are very anti-Semitic, like for example, I give an example in England, where the surprising situation that there are in America also, some of those who are most against Israel, and they swallow all the false propaganda of the extreme Muslims, and they're quite willing to support all those who even say openly they want to kill all the Jews. Something even they say, well, also want to kill the Christians. But they give them the political and often also some vocal leaders give them strong support, although they're Jews. So this is what might happen before the final redemption. This we say it's from the Zera Erevrav. So it says in the Zohar, and it's what we're witnessing today to some extent. When it says in the Gemara, when Mashiach comes, the government will turn over to heresy. One explanation is, it refers that you have even people govern different countries the world over. It doesn't really refer to government Israel and elsewhere. But this comes from the power of the mixed multitude in our time. Okay. But Yitz Hashem, we live in a time when Hashem is also demonstrating to us that we can really create a different spirit in our time, because if we approach even these people with knowledge of Torah on a deeper level, they all have the potential to teshuva and come back to Hashem.
Because they accepted the Torah, right?
Huh?
Because they were at Har Sinai and accepted the Torah, right?
Yes. Rav Zitzman gives his shiur here or downstairs? Rav Zitzman on the format. Downstairs? The shiur in this safe way, give it all. He answers the questions.